Good morning, cricket fans, and welcome to the Catch It podcast.
Oh, what a catch!
I'm Andrew Lush, and I started this podcast to have some interesting and insightful conversations about analytics and the stats behind the action, and to develop myself as a presenter.
Oh, brilliant!
I hope you enjoy our discussions and debates.
That is an absolutely outstanding catch.
Welcome to the Catch It podcast, and this, the new Super 6 series on the podcast. I'm so excited to bring this episode to you. It was an absolute joy to record this first pilot episode of a series that I've been tinkering with and working out the format for the last couple of weeks and months. But here it is, the first episode, and I really enjoyed sitting down with Charles Dagnall, BBC and Sky Sports commentator who played his cricket back in the day for Warwickshire and then moving over to Leicestershire, where he won the T20 Cup, as it was called in the day. Here follows Charles Dagnall's Super 6. Okay, Charles Dagnall, welcome to the Catch It podcast, and this is your Super 6. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, Andrew. Thank you so much for inviting me. I tell you what, with anything like this, whenever it might be to do with cricket, it might be to do with NFL or music or whatever, whenever anyone asks you to compile a list over the course of a fairly lengthy career so far, hopefully still much more to come, it's so ridiculously difficult, and you've got to try and make rules for yourself, because you asked me about the Super 6. Whether you want to explain it again, I'm not sure, but
we'll go into after this. But yeah.
When you ask a question such as I want you to pick out a load of players from either who you played against or who you played with, you go, oh my God. A, it gets the cogs whirring in your brain to think, who the hell did I play with? And you've got to go back all the way. And then name after name after name after name keep coming. And it's so difficult to narrow it down. So people sort of say, oh, what are your favorite 10 tracks ever? I want something from, you know, if someone asks us to do Desert Island Discs,
yeah,
you know, I'd be there for weeks trying to narrow it down, going, well, I've got Stevie Wonder in there, but I've not got Michael McDonald or Steely Dan, and it gets me into a bit of a blind panic. So
absolutely,
I set my own rules, but I'll explain that in a minute.
No, 100%. Well, for the listeners, I sent Daggers a, if I can call you Daggers, if that's okay, or would you prefer Charles?
Of course you can.
So I sent Daggers...
No, call us Daggers. That's everyone else knows.
So I sent Daggers the list of, I said, 6 players from who you've played with and played against for your ideal Super Sixers team. So, and to be honest, when I was researching it, I as well thought, wow, there have been a multitude of players that you've played with and played against. And this is definitely, I'm glad we've set you a challenge, but you put your own spin on it as well.
Yeah, I did. And basically, given the amount of players that I played with and against, and even though my career is not as long as some, not as short as others, I thought, right, how am I going to try and decipher what the best way of doing this is? So I suggested to myself that because there were so many that I played with that could fill a team, on its own, and you could fill 5 or 6 teams with some of the, especially overseas stars and home stars that you put in 6 or 7 other teams. So I said, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it together like, say, a county side where you would have 5 players and an overseas. Well, what I did was have 5 players that I played with in my side, because I probably know them best. One overseas player and one player that I played against that I would have in my team. And then you can focus a little bit more and narrow your options down. So I've tried to put it together. I had to have a wicketkeeper in there as well. So one of my 6 has got to be a wicketkeeper. And I tried to get a sort of balance of the side. However, there is a few sort of
However,
stretchy kind of ones.
There is a.
We'll explain because in six aside, everyone bowls one over, don't they? Everyone bowls one over, and you've got a bat from one to six. So I've got two players in there that can bowl, but you wouldn't exactly turn to them first off. So they'll give you an over.
No, 100%. I did when I was looking down your list. Can I just ask, is it sent in batting order? In terms of how are they bat, or were you mixing around?
Well, the beauty of it was that I picked the list and then realised that I wasn't in it.
Too bad.
So I wasn't in my best side.
Well, we've got seven.
Is that not a captain's?
You've just decided to make yourself a manager.
Is that not a captain's prerogative though, where you can drop yourself? I'm that important and that. Dictatorial as a captain that I've dropped myself in favour of better cricketers. So yes, I'm not sure who I'm going to lead because I actually picked a seventh man.
Because it turns out now
I've got to play. He's now my eighth man.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got a squad now. I've got a little squad.
Absolutely. Well, we'll shoot straight into it. So you started your
So you started your
playing career at Warwickshire and then moved over to Leicestershire. Mm-hmm. And before we get into the team, one of the questions I have is you were in the first seasons of T20 in terms of the first professional league, the Friends Life. It wasn't called the Friends Life or the Vitality Blast back then. It was just called the English T20 Cup. What was it like being at the start of it all? Was there any sense of it would grow to what it is today with the IPL and now with the WPL coming in?
That is a great question. And it was originally called the 2020 Cup. Mm-hmm. That's what it was actually called. It was called the 2020 Cup. Mm-hmm. It only went to T20 a couple of years down the line. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember who the sponsor was. I want to say it was Friends Providence, but I could be wrong. That's by the by. Mm-hmm. The first year of it was 2003. Mm-hmm. Now, it was a weird kind of time in that the players all wanted it. They'd been sort of saying this because when you grow up as youngsters in the club circuit, that's pretty much all you play. You play 20 over cricket midweek from 6 o'clock in the evening through till 9 o'clock at night.
Mm.
So it's a format that everyone's kind of used to, but sort of it was looked down upon really to be done at the professional level, not by players, but probably by fans. Oh, you know, this is just hit and giggle and, you know, it's just more pajama cricket and all of this. We said at the time, we thought it was a fantastic idea. We were begging for it because Sunday League cricket at the time was popular, but it wasn't jamming the stands. Mm. It wasn't bringing people in. For argument's sake, at Warwickshire, for a normal Sunday League game, which you would expect to have been reasonably well attended, you'd probably get 6,000 or 7,000 people on a good day, right? Nice weather, decent day at Edgbaston. At Leicestershire, maybe 2,000, something like that. Again, for a Sunday League game with decent weather and all things, that would sort of ballpark kind of figure.
Mm.
2020 started, and obviously there was a lot of marketing around it, and people were getting buzzed about it. There was a lot of talk, and both positively and negatively. Stop me if you've heard this story before a couple of years ago. And it was, but we were all like, "Yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be fantastic." We didn't know what to expect, though. We didn't know what the reaction would be. And as soon as the first year started, you couldn't move for people.
Mm.
I'd never played in front of crowds like that. You could not move. I'll give you an example. And I'll give you an example in a game where I just so happened to have done well. So
always good.
There was only about three games in my career. Yeah, I know. Well, I thought I'd get that in. Get it in a podcast early is what I say.
Is it your game against Nottinghamshire in 2000?
It was the game against Nottinghamshire.
Brilliant. Well, that works in brilliant with the next question.
Give me the next question.
So the first player that you have on your list is Kevin Peterson. Now, Kevin Peterson,
yes.
it's everyone knows about him playing for Surrey. in terms of, it's very well publicized and stuff. In terms of, if you're a casual fan, that's where he, or a new fan, that's where he finished his county career. But Kevin Peterson played for Nottinghamshire. He was his first county stint. Yeah. And Kevin Peterson was playing this game against Leicestershire. And
yes,
you were playing as well. And tell us what the day was like and tell us what happened.
Well, it was, I mean, look, loath I am to, you know, to go on a podcast and wax lyrical about my own achievements. But this is basically the one match I've dined out on for about 20 odd years. So, you know, in 10 years of playing professional cricket, I had to have a good day. And this was it. So it was one of those things where, in 2004, that's what, I mean, 2003, everyone was finding out about it. Leicestershire got through to the finals day on 2003, but it was buzzing. People really got to grips with it in the following year. This particular day was a red hot day. It was at Grace Road. It was televised on Sky. Bumble was down there, and Charles Colville, I think it was Ronnie O'Reilly and Robert Croft were the other commentators. You could not move. You could not move for people. The gap, there is a sort of roadway that goes between the pavilion and the ground at Grace Road. And you couldn't get from the pavilion, the door to the pavilion where the changing rooms were, to the ground. You just had to weave your way through people. It was heaving. Absolutely. We'd never seen anything like it. You know, Grace Road holds, 6,000 people? I kid you not, there must have been 8 to 10 there. It was absolutely rammed. Glorious summer's day, people drinking and having a good time, having a great time. And it was a real eye-opener. That was the year that people went, wow, you know, this is really catching on. This is going to go places. The T20 game.
This is something that could be very big and very exciting.
Oh, yeah. And that really was the day. And finals day that year was actually at Edgbaston. The first finals day was Trent Bridge. Second was Edgbaston. I think the next one in 05 was at the Oval. And I can't remember for the life of me. Oh, the next one, 06, was at Trent Bridge again. But soon after, Edgbaston became, and that was nice for me when we got to the final in 2004, that that we could go back to Edgbaston, or I could go back to Edgbaston.
Did it feel quite nice to get back and win that T20 Cup at Edgbaston, former county?
Yeah, very much.
Felt a bit home.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, totally. Loads of people there that I knew and loved. And and I left there on, you know, I didn't actually get people that, oh, you got sacked from Warwickshire. No, I left in the middle of a contract because I actually wanted to find out if I could play. I wanted to find out if I was good enough, sort of thing. And so, long story short, I was in the middle of a 2-year contract. Leicestershire sort of were interested and came in for me. And I asked Warwickshire if I could go. And after a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, basically, I sort of said, look, yeah, you can go. Because I just wanted to play all cricket. At Warwickshire, I was mainly a one-day bowler.
Okay.
But I wanted to play all forms of cricket. Just so that was the reason why I went. But on this particular day, it just so happened that...
Hot day at Grace Road.
The one day at Grace Road. The pitch was doing just enough. The ball was coming out nicely. I was bowling downhill with the wind, so that I was obviously cranking it up to at least, I don't know, 77 miles an hour. I managed to nip Kev out first ball. With an LBW. Let me tell you, never has any bowler appealed for an LBW harder or longer in their life, because I was a nervous wreck. You know, and this is why Kevin Peterson is in my side first up, because you may think he's the guy, he's the one player in my side that I played against, but he's not. He, I actually played with.
Okay.
And we played... So the story behind that. Anyway, I got Kev out.
Had a very good day. Four wickets for the economy of 5.5. Brilliant spell. Dine out in it forevermore.
Yes. I don't remember who else I got out. I think it was Bill Al-Shafei out, Mark Elam and Russell Warren. But I mean,
you also took catch as well, according to my notes. So you were keeping yourself in the action.
Which is more amazing. It is more amazing. I think I caught Reedy out, actually, off Claude Henderson on the boundary edge. And I sort of took it, and there was a camera right in front of us. And I sort of just sort of like flipped the ball up and went, yeah, you know, no problems. That's... And I, again, under any catch, the new coach of Worcestershire, Alan Richardson, who is one of my best friends, will tell you that under any catch, I was, it was proper back the ball, never back daggers. So,
but this day at Grace Road, everything was going Charles Dagnall's way.
Oh, everything transpired to go well. But but with Kevin, we played in a trial game. He played in a trial game. I was on the staff at Warwickshire. We were playing a second 11 game. I want to say against Middlesex. I can't remember, but maybe. He played and trialed for Warwickshire.
Okay.
And we got rolled for about 130, and he got 80 of them. And he hit a pull shot at Leamington. Now, Leamington is next to a sort of housing estate kind of thing. Lovely ground, beautiful ground. But the walls back onto the ground. And he hit this ball. He pulled a quick bowl. I can't remember who it was. Pulled him, hit the wall of the house, and the ball ended up back at the bowler's mark, right? And we were just like open mouth, like this guy is ridiculous. Now, I played against Kevin in the Birmingham League. He was playing for Cannock, and I was playing for Stratford and then Coventry and North Warwick. So we knew about him. But then when you could see, he just stepped it up and stepped it up a little bit more. Now, we all then, all the bowlers in the Warwickshire ranks went straight to the second 11 coach, Neil Abberley, and said, please sign this guy because we don't want to have to bowl at him, right? And as it turned out, he'd already signed for Nottinghamshire. But say what you like about Kevin. And all of the stories and the histrionics and what have you in his England career, his Surrey career, and all of that sort of stuff.
All the glitz and glamour before the CPL, the Big Bash, and the IPL. What was your impression of him back in those days?
Best player I've ever seen. Best player I've ever seen.
Incredibly talented.
And you know, I watched as a kid, you know, Viv Richards and Ian Botham and all of these, David Gower and all. Kevin Peterson is the one guy who I think struck fear into people. He was the first of the proper bar emptiers. You know, you might get Botham, but you might get him for, you know, I mean, in his early career, but you might get him for half an hour, 45 minutes kind of thing. Kevin Peterson, people bought tickets to go and watch him bat. He was a rock star. They're different. They are different people. They're built differently. They don't think necessarily the same way as, you know, run-of-the-mill people think. And I like my rock stars. And you know, I work with Kevin and stuff. We don't always agree on things and the way, and you're not getting him off. If he thinks he's right, that's it. You're not changing his mind. But as a player, I don't think I could have picked anyone. I'll give you a good example. Here's my final point on Kev. The ICC do a all-time batting rankings for T20 cricket. Okay, now you can think about this for a second. All-time batting rankings for T20 cricket. Some of the people in there. Now, T20 has changed a lot
massively
over the last sort of 10 years or so. And the people who are in there are people, I would imagine, I think it was Barbara Zams in there, I think. Don't quote me on this, Aaron Finch, people like that. People who have played in the latter years of T20 cricket. Kevin Peterson is still in the all-time batting rankings for T20 cricket. I think he was number 6. And he packed in around about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That tells you how good this guy was and how ahead of his time he was. You know, and for me...
T20 World Cup winner.
With England, absolutely. And he was something different, something special. And for me, the best player I have ever seen live, playing with, playing against, or commentating. He's one of the players that, for me, fits that bill. He is a different gravy. Be interesting captaining him, though.
Yeah, I was about to say. Would it be? he would be making sure.
Kevin would be there just going, shut up, Daggers. Shut up.
Would he fall into this team when you're throwing him to the ball? If I do remember correctly, he bowls offies. So is he taking the first over, or are you saying, Kev, just wait a little bit before we're needing your off spin?
No. I've got plans. You see, okay. He would just fall in the middle overs. But Kevin originally was was an off spinner. That's what he did, an off spinner who batted a bit. And he and what other people don't realise is about Kevin is that he worked his tail off. People thought he didn't care, or he wasn't interested, or stuff like that. That's utter garbage. He worked his absolute tail off.
Yeah, it's interesting with those kind of players who are in it, have, as you said, have a little bit of a different mindset. How sometimes they can either be villainized or just brought up to that higher level of kind of hero worship. And I think it's very hard to have that kind of level in terms of when everyone talks about kind of the late Kobe Bryant in basketball. Some people absolutely hated him.
Yeah.
But it's undeniable that he does have the records and stuff to prove it. And it's interesting with Kevin in terms of potentially his England career being cut short slightly, and potentially if he had come in maybe 10 years later, would he have his kind of franchise commitments been managed differently in different England setups?
What is interesting, everything that he said would happen has happened. He wanted to go and take some time off with England to go and play IPL. Now it's commonplace. At the time, he was the first. He was the first to do that. He saw where it was going and how it was going. I will always argue this. Could Kevin have done things differently? Yes. Could England have managed him completely different? Yes.
Yeah.
You don't manage him like you manage everybody else, in my opinion. But be that as it may, he's in my side.
He's in the side.
Not a bad start.
It's a good start for sure. So second up, you've got Dominic Osler. Now tell me a bit more about him. He played for Warwickshire. I'm guessing he's another one of your players you played with. In terms of in your Warwickshire days,
yes, and arguably one of the great men of cricket, Dominic Osler. I adore him. In fact, I think he's coaching and has been coaching and been doing a little bit in the 100, I think.
Okay,
as well as Dominic Osler, but very fine player. Interesting. He was one of these players for Warwickshire. He went on an England A tour as well, and. Just one of those people who hits you in the right spot with his humour and he's a very languid kind of guy, very chilled out, very loving, but my goodness, he's fiercely loyal as well. And a seriously good player. One thing, he is the best slip fielder I've ever played with by an absolute stretch. And I've played with some good ones as well.
Just bucket hands there.
And he caught pigeons in the slips. It was ridiculous. At Warwickshire, you had a cordon of Keith Piper, the wicketkeeper. You had Dominic Osler. He was always second slip. Knighty was in there as well. For the life of me, I can't remember who first slip was. But Harry Munton was in there sometimes as well, Tim Munton. But you had some great slip fielders for Warwickshire. You had to. For reasons I'll come into a little bit later. But
I was about to say, with one of your later players.
With one of my later players. But, yeah, great bloke, great player. And really, he was one of the success stories of someone like Bob Woolmer, the late, great Bob Woolmer, who, when he got Aussie and basically built him up, told him how great he was and worked, because he was a really, really good player, was Aussie. And beautiful timer of the ball. But when Bob was there, Aussie scored runs. When Bob wasn't there, he didn't. And then Bob came back, and funnily enough, Aussie scored another 1,000 runs. And it was, a little bit like that. But the one reason that I have picked Dominic Osler as well as him being a great bloke and all of his attributes that he's got.
Great bloke, great hands, great bat.
Great hands, great batter. the filthiest off-spinner in the history of mankind. But the reason I have picked him is I have played more charity six-a-side games against Dominic Ossler. You know, in these sort of round-robin things, the two finalists meet at the end.
Yeah.
I've never seen Dominic Ossler on a losing side, ever.
Is he the player to take the kind of the low half volley that someone then pulls him out to cow corner, and then
he is his filthy off spin, which he just floats up,
oh,
and just puts snow on it, and it's so slow you can't get any power on it, and he gets you out, or you're bowled, or you're stumped, or whatever. And he always smashes it and gets his 25 retired or 50 retired or whatever it is like that. And he is an absolute six-a-side bandit. He's a proper six-a-side bandit. And he's the best I've ever played with. I've never seen Aussie lose a six-a-side tournament. You know, it's one of these corporate days where you get a pro cricketer thrown in. And we used to play loads. And Aussie, I've never, ever seen him go away without a trophy. And he'll always just come up to you at the end, give you a massive sort of slapped handshake, and then he squeezes your hand like that, and you're like, ah, he's strong as an ox, absolute strong as an ox, but just genuinely the loveliest man. And he'll always just go, yeah, another one in the bank, man, Dennis. And there you go, that's it, he's done. He's done another six-a-side.
Those part-timers can be lethal.
So the only opportunity to get a six-a-side bandit on my side, and I'm having him in.
Fair. No, that's absolutely fair. In terms of you talking about kind of slow, loopy off-spin, very similar to what Jeremy Snape did in your Leicestershire side.
Well, I'm loath to compare Jeremy Snape with Dominic Ossler's off-spin, because Jerry will never talk to me again.
Yes,
if he ever heard this, and probably thought I was comparing the two.
He
did it with a great deal of skill.
Yeah.
Jeremy Snape did. He did it with a huge amount of skill, whereas Ozzy just does it. Well, there is a skill to it, I suppose. But yeah, his is...
There's a randomness to it as well.
Yeah, his is pure...
There's not a plan to it.
Grenade filth that he bowls, whereas Snapper did it. Snapper got the best out in competitive games doing that. So, there's no comparison there.
Fair enough. So useful in terms of, are you batting Kevin and Dominic both at 1 and 2?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. In terms of a good opening partnership, and then the useful, both can bowl off spin. But then in terms of you're thinking more useful and more kind of bargaining those wickets, stealing those wickets from Dominic Ossler.
Yes. Brilliant. Totally. Ossie is that ace in the hole where you don't think he's going to, all the batters will think, All the opposition will come in and think, oh my God, I'm going to score thousands against this. And Ozzy will pick up 2 for 4,
yeah,
off his 6 deliveries or something like that.
No, 100%. Moving on to your number 3, you've got Phil de Freitas. So tell me a bit more about this England and, I'd say, Leicestershire great that you've played with.
Well, Daffy, as he's better known, obviously 40-odd tests, 44 tests, I think it is, 100 one day, 2 World Cup finals. And I would have him in, A, because he's serious cricketer. You know, one of the few that's got 10,000 runs and 1,000 first-class wickets. Obviously, his England record, he started at Leicestershire, then went to Lancashire, then Derbyshire, then returned back to Leicestershire.
Okay.
And I played with him when he was at the latter part of his career. And we became very close. And I wouldn't put the success, and I say success in inverted commas, to me it was success. He shaped me as a cricketer. I was playing professional cricketer, but I was a little bit lost. I didn't know what I was really. I wasn't really an all-rounder, and nor did I know what sort of bowler I wanted to be. And it was Daffy, when I turned up to Leicestershire, it was Daffy who moulded that and shaped me into the cricketer I then became. And unfortunately, with injury, couldn't carry on potentially to what I could have become. I wasn't ever going to play for England. That was never a thing. But it could have been a much more sort of solid county player, if you like. Because then it was only under Daffy's tutelage to a degree that enabled me to have that sort of success in 03 and 04 and feel like I was...
What was frustrating you about your game in terms of you just didn't have a solid... You didn't feel like you could build on your role?
I was always tinkering. I signed at Warwickshire, believe it or not, as an all-rounder. Mm-hmm. And they were just really sort of concentrating on my bowling. Mm. They wanted to work on my bowling and develop an outswing, which they did. Mm. You know, I swung the ball in, bowled leg cutters at reasonable pace, not electric, but reasonable. And they wanted me to develop an outswinger. Mm-hmm. And so it took probably 18 months to do that. And that's exactly what happened, which, you know, I was eternally grateful for, because I had then two modes of dismissal. And over time, like a very, 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 very poor man's James Anderson was able to swing it both ways at will and, you know, and pick up various different skills from people like Ed Giddins and that's, you know, for the bowlers that you played alongside, little bits and bobs that you picked up from them. But I was kind of in a sort of, I don't know what I am. I'm not a quick bowler. I'm a sort of change bowler. I'll take the new ball in one day cricket, but I'm, you know, I've not been consistent enough. Mm. I've not been, you know, and I was more concerned about putting it in the right area rather than bowling it. And Daffy said, right, I want you to just start charging in now, like pretending you're a fast bowler. Mm. And I went, well, okay. So I did. And I was, oh man. And me and him did a lot of fitness work together. And granted, there was a decade of age between us. But, you know, I got to serious fitness levels. Mm. Because I wanted to be as fit as I possibly could. Athletic was not an ounce of fat on me, but I was built strong. Mm. At the time, I was built strong. And so I then started charging in. And suddenly, it wasn't that I turned from a 75-mile-an-hour bowler into a 90-mile-an-hour bowler. That in no way did that happen. Mm. Changed us from a sort of 76-mile-an-hour bowler to an 81-mile-an-hour bowler.
Ah, right.
And the difference I then found was, rather than getting people caught extra cover, caught backward point, I'm getting them nipped off, you know, because
extra
that little bit of half yard of extra pace, hitting the bat differently. And so, and I went, got it. I've got it. Not only can I do that, I can swing it both ways. So, I then had skills that I believed in my own ability. Daffy got me to be the one to believe that I deserved to be there, kind of thing.
Believed you had a spot in that Leicestershire team.
Well, I always had this thing where, am I good enough? Am I good enough? Am I, you know, a bit of that self-doubt, if you like. You know, I knew I had skills. From the ball, I bowl all day for you, all day. You know, I bowled some enormous spells. You know, in the leagues when I was growing up, you know, as a pro in the leagues up in Lancashire, you used to bowl 25 overs in one spell. Mm. You did that on a Saturday. You did that on a Sunday. That was your job as a quick bowler. You bowled 25 overs and batted three. And, you know, I remember when we won promotion with Warwickshire in 2000, I think it was, maybe 2001. Mm. Played against Derby, got my career best at Derby, and I bowled a 23-over spell straight. Mm. All the way through the first Derbyshire innings. And then I bowled another 18 overs straight in the next innings because the ball was swinging and stuff. So I'll bowl all day.
It's working, and you've got to keep that kind of momentum going for a captain and a bowler.
Absolutely. Oh, I'll just, how are you feeling? My answer was always the same. Fine. I'm absolutely fine. Let me carry on. You know, I always believed I was going to get someone, but I just didn't believe I belonged until Philip de Freitas.
Okay.
And it was he that gave me that confidence and belief in myself. And Daffy made an outlandish comment once. He saw, so Daggs is going to play for England. Mm-hmm. And part of me, of course, I didn't believe him, right? But even him saying it to other people gave me an enormous lift. Whether he believed it or not, it didn't kind of matter at the time.
It just gave you that self-awareness that he appreciated what you were doing. And rated your skills.
Yeah, totally. Mm. Totally right. And he did rate me. And that was the thing. He did rate me. And I listened. And when he's at mid-off and he's easy captain, and he's got 20 years of bowling in him. So I'm just absorbing all this information. Yeah. Oh, he's playing a little bit like this. His face is open. We need an extra gully in there. We need, why? And I'm going, why? He says, bowl a little channel. here, bowler, try him with an in swinger now, bounce him, or whatever. And all this knowledge is starting to flood through to me from him, and you then start developing your own and understanding it yourself. Yeah. You know, me and Daff were great mates. It's so much so that he's godfather to my daughter.
Oh, brilliant!
And I think I know he's doing some coaching at Leicestershire. Mm. He did some bowling coaching at Nottinghamshire, and if you do your research, I think that whilst he was bowling coach at Nottinghamshire, the bowling there, I think they had the best averages for 3 years on a run. And I don't think that's any coincidence. I think he is a very, very fine coach and a very, very fine bloke.
Mm. Okay. So yeah. Philip de Freitas comes into your team as that bowling mentor in terms of he's going to take the ball, he's going to do all kind of things with it, but then also be that kind of wise head in the team. In terms of that wise character that will be able to take wickets, he'll be able to be kind of handy with the bat in terms of his top scored with a...
Great batsman, brilliant in the field as well, especially in the deep field. Mm. He had an electric arm. And arguably in the dressing room as well, although he is one of the most... He's such a nuisance. I can't tell you. if we were off the rain, right, he doesn't do boredom, Daffy. He doesn't do it, and he tries to just be a nuisance to everyone. If they're reading a book, if they're having a quiet moment in the dressing room or something like that, and they're just or a game of cards or whatever, he'll just come up and he'll just flick the cards off the table, or he'll just hit someone or just throw an orange at someone. So he's just an absolute nuisance.
So you've got
he told jokes. That never ever ended. He'd just be making them up, and he'd have people's attention, and we're just there going, "Daff, this is not going anywhere." And he's such a nuisance. So but I loved him for it. It was hysterical.
I can imagine. So you've just got Dominic Osler and Kevin Peterson kind of relaxing, trying to get into the head as the rain bake's about to stop, and you've got Philip de Freitas just trying to egg them on. She's like, "Oh, what are we going to do next? What's happening on the net?
Do you want
to play some cards? Do you want to do something else?"
I'm not sure if I actually want to necessarily captain this team anymore, actually thinking about it.
A lot of characters.
It would be good value. I tell you, it would be good value.
And the characters just keep coming in terms of in your fourth pick, you've got Paul Nixon, played with at Leicestershire, icon.
Do you know what? Now we're talking and saying this out loud, adding Nico to that mix might not necessarily be the wisest course. I'll tell you what you want to do. You want to put like a GoPro in the corner of the dressing room just to catch all the shenanigans and the silliness and the conversations that we'd have. I've got to have a keeper.
Yeah.
And I played with two great keepers, Keith Piper. And I played against some of the best. And when I say some of the best, there are very few. You imagine now the best keeper in the country is probably Ben Folkes, right? With the gloves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm talking about glovemen. Mm-hmm. Ben Folkes, the lad at Hampshire, is it Bates?
Yes.
I can't remember who's... Yeah, fabulous, fabulous hands.
In terms of cricketing keepers... In terms of that win you games, Bates was up there. In terms of the role wicketkeeper has evolved in the kind of the last 10 years massively. In terms
very
of
very much. Well, it was Adam Gilchrist that changed everything.
Absolutely,
that was what changed everything. Mm-hmm. But I played in an era where, or at the beginning of my career, you had Jack Russell, Warren Hegg, Carl Cricken, Richard Blakey at Yorkshire. You had Rob Turner at Somerset. You had, who else? Yeah. I mean, everyone had Steve Rhodes at Worcestershire. You had David Nash at Middlesex. I mean, these are the names that just coming off the top of my head. Mm. These were seriously good keepers and wonderful glovemen.
Mm.
And, you know, they're now not as... regular, genuine keepers are not as regular as they used to be because everyone's looking for the keeper batter.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand given the type of cricketer that we're trying to get to now. You know, you might be a great batter and a sort of average keeper sort of thing, but that'll do. or you might, you know, I think, you know, to have those guys who were so natural behind the stumps. I mean, Jack Russell's hands. I mean, and for me, the best of a lot of them was Carl Crichton at Derbyshire. I mean, he did things. He was standing up to every single seamer at Derby and making it look like it was just a cakewalk. It was like he was born to do it. Mm. And he was a fabulous wicketkeeper. But
as a bowler, just to chime in there, as a bowler, what was your thoughts and feelings if you saw a keeper coming up to the stumps against your bowling?
Yeah, never minded. Never minded. That never bothered me. No, didn't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. Because it then kept batters in their crease. And given the keepers that I had, I knew with Nico and with Pipes, but Pipes especially, I mean, Pipes was sensational. So, so good. That you knew that if he'd nicked it, it's out. It's gone. They ain't dropping it. They also gave you a stumping option, so another opportunity for a wicket. But a lot of bowlers felt as though it was a slight on their pace that keepers were standing up. I couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. Keeper's good enough to stand up to me, then do it. It never bothered my... A lot of bowlers get put off with the kind of lengths, and so I loved it. I absolutely loved it and tried to get them up to the stumps as often as possible. Because... Also, it gave us an opportunity, just a different dynamic to the game, where batters couldn't, you know, it wasn't quick enough. Batters could come on the front foot to you and all of that. But keeping them stuck, making them do things that they didn't necessarily want to do, that was the key. And having those...
Changing the game, making them have to think a different way.
Totally right. And if they were good enough, and those two were.
And then also you bring in the fact that Paul Nixon is talking to you in your ear for the next 5-10 overs.
Oh, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. I really wouldn't. Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, as a teammate, just the best. I mean, just the best. The most positive man you have ever met in your life. You know, always turning bad situations into good. Never looking backwards, always forwards. And he's got this addictive personality, and he can't help. Sometimes you're like, "Oh, Nico, come on, not me, come on." But he knows that. He, you know, that's his way, and you don't want to change that about him at all. But we used to, instead of, you know, like, you know, gruff fast bowler would come down and spit and swear at batters and stuff like that. I couldn't do that. I wasn't quick enough. You know, I had a bouncer. Yeah. I used it sparingly, and it was used as a surprise kind of thing. But me and Nico used to have some really random conversations just during an over.
Yeah.
So you know, I'd be bowling and he'd just be nice daggers. Have you had a haircut, mate? Have you had a haircut? Yeah, I was thinking about colouring it, Nico. What do you reckon? And just going on about completely random things, talking to each other. Why? Because we wanted to put the batter off.
Yeah.
If we could say something funny, I always thought if you go off and spit and swear at a batter, he's going to dig in. Right? He's going to dig in. He's going to be right. You're not getting me out. Right. You know, rather than, why not try and make him laugh, break his concentration? You know, so I would always try and have a chuckle with them, make them laugh, or, you know, smile or have a little funny comment or something like that. Because that's
The Marnus Labuschagne approach.
Yeah, a little bit, but kind of hopefully better content than he gives you. You know, Australian and all. Yeah. But, you know, we used to come up with a variety of different stuff, but just to try and break a batter's concentration. So he's thinking about maybe having a chuckle about what we're going on about rather than concentrating on what's coming down here. And look, it didn't take a lot for batters to laugh at me when I was coming into bowl. But you know what? Nico is one of those who you would take into the trenches with you. And he would always give you absolutely every sinew of what he had.
He gave everything for Leicestershire in terms of 96 county T20s. He's won the kind of competition three times. But I'd say Leicestershire is the most successful T20 side in the county. And I think When you put down, I'd looked down the list of the Leicester T20 players that you played with, and I was kind of guessing and stuff, and I was like, right, I reckon Paul Nixon is going to be your keeper. And in terms of my everlasting memory of Paul Nixon is him taking the catch in the 2011 final, in terms of flinging out his arm, taking it one-handed, and then just bear hugging a young James Taylor. In terms of, he just had that awe and character around him. And in terms of, definitely, did you feel that when playing with him?
Yeah, I mean, I commentated on that game. Yeah, it was Kyron Pollard.
Mm.
And it was off the bowling of a guy called Wayne White. And I will never forget it, just thinking, you know what, there's a million keepers that could have taken that, but only one that really would have in that moment. And the reason why, he was so fit, the fittest 39-year-old or whatever he was at the time you would ever wish to see. Absolute stacked. He was a machine, was Nico. Always stretching, always couldn't sit still. I mean, you know, real fidget. But he was always making sure he was the fittest, the stretchiest, the bendiest, his work ethic was incredible. And genuinely, I say this with hand on heart, he would do anything for you. I could ring him up tomorrow and have a problem, and I know that Nico would try and sort it out for you or help in some kind of capacity. He's that kind of guy. And I see him having success with coaching. Obviously, Leicestershire's a tough job, and I think he is the perfect person for that job, because he'll never, I would imagine, you know, you're never going to compete with Surrey or Lancashire or stuff like that, but he's trying to produce.
It's a hard one.
Good cricketers. It is.
Mm.
And he's had experience elsewhere now, over in Pakistan, and he's had success there. He's had success in the Caribbean Premier League as head coach as well. And I'm so thankful that he has had that success. Because he's one of those that really genuinely lives and breathes cricket, and he deserves it too. So he is by far and away the keeper that I picked.
Absolutely. Brilliant, brilliant choice. We'll shoot on straight on to your fifth choice. You've got another right arm seamer into the fix with Dominic Cork. So in terms of this, it's pretty seam heavy. In terms of, we've gone for no specialist spinners.
It is seam heavy, but I've still got my two spinners, you see, just to give me a little bit, my Peterson Osler axis.
Yeah.
In the middle. He is my one choice outside of the people who I played with.
Mm-hmm.
Talking of nuisances, he is up there.
Fellow Sky Sports commentator and broadcaster.
Yeah, I adore him. I really do.
Did you find him more frustrating playing against, or is that sometimes when you've been in the commentary box with him?
Absolute nightmare to play against. Nightmare. Yes. And what Corky, I adore working with Corky. Mm. He makes me howl laughing. But for all of his fun and his silliness, there's a great brain in there. There's a really good cricketing brain. I like the way he sees the game. Mm-hmm. Another one of these combative, never give up, never say die kind of cricketers.
Mm.
But that, I think, can be also, it can taint him a little bit. He was an outstandingly skilled cricketer. I mean, really was. With both bat and ball. And again, maybe, I don't know. I don't know why he maybe didn't play the amount of cricket that he should have done for England. And I genuinely don't know why. Maybe it was because other people, the turnover of cricketers at that time was quite heavy. But my God, what a player. I mean, and you don't have the career that he's had and the length of career that he's had without being, you know, of that kind of ilk. And you look at De Freitas, you look at Cork. I mean, all of the guys I work with on Sky, I mean, you know, I'm very lucky. You know, when you know, obviously when we get to work with the big boys and Michael Atherton and Nasser Hussain, but you look at someone like, I mean, for me, one of the finest commentators is Butch, is Mark Butcher. I think he's a staggeringly good commentator, frustratingly. And, you know, and I say frustratingly is because, you know, I think I listen to some of his phrases and go, geez, you know, I wish I'd said that. Crikey. Mm. And he's just lovely. He's the best Butch. And we are blessed to go to work every day and be... And to have Lydia Greenway and to have Dominic Cork and to have Mark Butcher and Nasser Sain and Mike Atherton and then Simon Dool who comes in. They're all brilliant people. You know, I adore Lydia. You know, we do a lot of stuff together and we've become quite close because of the amount of cricket that we cover together. And she is just the best. I love her. As a human, as a cricketer, still led for individually, taking the greatest catch I've ever seen live. That was down in Somerset in a women's international against India, I think it was. It was something that it was genuinely, truly ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it. Running 20 yards to a left-hand side, then a full-length top left-hand corner goalkeeper's dive, wow. Both hands, and she was about 6 foot off the ground doing it. It was just nuts. Anyway, that's by the by.
Corky. Ridiculous amount of talent and skill in the Skybox commentary box. In terms of the knowledge that you all bring together.
Well, how I've managed to squeeze in there, God only knows if that's the criteria. But Corky was the kind of cricket I hated playing against, which means you always want someone like that in your side. It's the classic Neil Warnock. You don't want to play against him, but you want to play for him. And Corky, with his skill, with both bat and ball, his personality, which I love. I do love it because he's mischievous. He really is. And that you kind of need. It keeps you going, you know, and he knows that. He keeps you going. That kind of that kind of naughtiness about him. But in there lies a brilliant cricket brain, a person with a great deal of skill and a heart as big as a lion. And that is what you want. That is what you want in your sides. And yet again, another guy. And this is a seriously good batting lineup, by the way. You've got Kevin Peterson, then Dominic Osler, and then you've got Philip DeFreitas, Paul Nixon, and Dominic Cork.
But I say you won't die trying. To be fair, in terms of your bank all the way down to five.
There's going to be a lot of rubbish talked in that dressing room, but you'd have a good time listening.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of discussions in terms of if you're going down to the last over and they need like two runs off two balls, you're going to have, and you're bowling daggers, they're going to have a lot of people around you, a lot of different cricketing minds to be trying to affect what you're going to bowl.
Yeah, one thing I will say is Nico, it was never short of a random theory about the game. So he'd come up to you and go, daggers, mate, I've got an idea. I'm gonna stand 3 foot down the leg side because the batter won't know what's it. And we're like, why are you doing that? Why? And then when four byes go down because I've bowled on the off stump or whatever and he's missed it, or I don't know. But he always had a random theory. Him and Dougie Brown. We're always cricketers that had sort of real theories about the game. But yes, we wouldn't be short of ideas if it was two off two. Trust me.
No, for sure. So you've Dominic Cork in terms of he's still handy with the bat right all the way down. He's got first class 200 in terms of he's that clever kind of bowler. You have kind of a lot of characters around this team in terms of would you reckon it'd be a bit of an argument? A couple of arguments breaking out in terms of when you're telling people when to bowl and when to bat.
I would be like Kofi Annan or Boutros Ghali. I would be the head of the United Nations trying to just simmer everything down. I would be peacemaker and the sort of go-between if two of my characters have had a pop at each other and stuff. But you know what? It's not a bad sign.
Not a bad sign. And it only gets better.
Yeah, now in this instance, I have now dropped myself, okay? because five cricketers we've got, and I've dropped myself to allow a slightly different style of bowler to come in.
And in terms of, we're not kind of lowering down the heat in terms of, we've gone for seam, we're going to go even quicker with Alan Donald, the South African pacemeister, Why have you selected Alan for this role, apart from the obvious that he's one of the greatest South African test, I know, test bowlers in history?
Oh, what a bowler. Mm. What a bowler. And what a bloke as well. Alan Donald is the epitome of what an overseas bowler is, especially in the county game. And, you know, I mean, forget, I know it sounds ridiculous, but forget his test record. It's ridiculous, his test record. Remember, a lot of his career was, he wasn't able to have it until probably, 30-odd years old or something like that because of the apartheid rule. Yeah. When South Africa came back in 1991, he was then able to pick up a test career and his record speaks for itself. There's a reason why he's called White Lightning. And he was the smoothest and most fearsome bowler I have seen live. Thank God he was on my side. And I always like to say to Alan Donald that I used to soften them up for him. But really, it was, you know, when you've got White Lightning at one end and then me at the other end, like persistent drizzle, then it's sort of like, you know, that was kind of what it was at Warwickshire. I could have picked numerous overseas players that I played with. So I was lucky enough. I was lucky enough to play with Michael Bevan, with Bradley Hodge, with Asper Drakes, Dinesh Mongia.
You had Virender Sehwag in your T20.
Virender Sehwag. I played Veru, who was just a delight. And whenever I see him now, we still hark back to the half a season that he played at Leicestershire because we were quite close to that. And it was always great to hear from him. Who else did we have? We had Vasper Drakes with Sean Pollock. But for me, and it was a pick of two bowlers, actually, the overseas bowlers. One was Javagal Srinath, who I played with, who was a magician and a brilliant bloke, absolutely brilliant. Great overseas pro, a real proper magician with the ball. He was staggeringly good, just seaming it around. And the skill of the guy was incredible. When you consider that, you know, he was the main seamer on pitches which weren't necessarily helpful in India. When he came over to England, he was just magnificent. I adored him.
Where did he play?
He played at Leicestershire.
Played at Leicestershire. Okay.
Yeah, at Leicestershire. But AD was just everything. It was, you know, I was the youngest, one of the younger players on the staff, and he welcomed you in. This is Alan Donald. You know, he'd been playing for Warwickshire for 10 years or whatever, and he welcomed you in. Mm-hmm. And he's the best audience in the world because, you know, he liked my personality. I think I made him laugh, and we still text each other today, you know, now and again. And you know, I don't like bothering him, but he, for me, absolutely the best bowler that as in pace bowler I've ever been on the field with. I was playing in a game. I remember my debut game in the Championship where we played against Middlesex at Lord's. And it was a big enough experience for me, you know, playing at Lord's, making my Championship debut and opening or being bowling in the attack with Alan Donald, bowling at the other end to him. And he took the new ball and it was Justin Langer, who was the overseas for Middlesex. And watching Alan Donald bowl to Justin Langer and bowl frighteningly quick with Langer playing him absolutely brilliantly, that was Test cricket. That wasn't county cricket, that was Test cricket. And it was almost as though the rest of us didn't really matter. It was just those two.
Focused into that battle.
And it was scintillating. Yeah, scintillating. I still remember to this day, fielding at long leg, sort of deep backward square kind of thing on the pull. And watching AD race in from the pavilion end and watching Langer's feet, watching him play and just the time he had and how quickly Donald was bowling. It was just riveting. And I was playing in the game. So it was a weird sensation. But AD, you know, this tells you about the bloke. He was out injured and he was coming back from injury and we were playing a Sunday league game. And I was really proud to actually, in a separate sense, I was really proud to be on the field for his last ever game for Warwickshire. And I was playing in that game. As it turned out, I got wickets. But that was a real big moment for a young cricketer to, mm-hmm. to be on, you know, when a legend was packing in from Warwickshire, that was quite a moment.
Can I ask, did you ever drop a catch off him?
Didn't dare.
Yeah.
And luckily none came my way. but he was coming back from injury.
Mm.
And we took a wicket, someone took a wicket, and we came together as the bowling, as you do in the huddle after a wicket is taken, and the drinks come out. And it's Alan Donald bringing the drinks out for the rest of the lads.
Wow.
And we're like, what the hell's going on? AD, come on, mate. You know, and he's like, no, you know, you do it enough for me, I'm doing it for you. You know, and that was the character of the guy. He wasn't too big to do that sort of thing. Team was everything.
Yeah.
Togetherness was everything. That bond of cricketers was everything to him. So you won't hear me say any bad word against that bloke. I think he is an absolute champion.
Incredible team player. In terms of when you just look at, obviously, you know, the test records and stuff, but List A in terms of best figures of 6 for 15, South Africa ODI best figures of 6 for 23. He'd be kind of coming in and steaming in those opening overs, would you say, in your six-a-side team?
Yeah.
Yeah. First ball.
No, I'll tell you what, he wouldn't.
Okay.
He wouldn't. And the reason was, and this is the weird thing, with a white ball, Alan couldn't really control the white ball brilliantly.
Okay.
So, because he swung it too much and at pace, and it was, you know. So, actually, what happened was me and Dougie Brown used to open the bowling because we had control of it and would do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you had on first change, AD would come on.
So a slight bit of kind of swing taken off the ball by those first kind of couple of overs.
Yeah. And
then when he came in, he could still move it, but because his pace in terms of the ball slightly older, but he could actually move it more at that period of the game and was more effective then.
He just had better control of the white ball when the lacquer had come off it a little bit, whereas we could control it a little bit more up front, me and Doug. And, you know, Doug would swing in, I would swing it sort of both ways, but would be very metronomic with our area. So we were always sort of saying, right, go on, I dare you. That's when the white ball used to swing a little bit more. And we could control it. We'd have a couple of slips in or whatever and you know, try and get people going after us, and that would create wickets. So if AD's coming on first change and they're already three down, you know, that was quite a big thing to have. And then Ashley would come in, Ashley Giles, and would go for next to nothing anyway because he was a fabulous white ball bowler. And then you had Neil Smith and Graham Welsh and people like that. So yeah, it was pretty good side though.
Yeah. Fairly all right. In terms of...
Yeah.
So we've got this incredible team lined up. Who would you slot... If you had to pull out one player for your subs bench, in terms of who would you slot yourself in for? So we've got Kevin Peterson. We've got Dominic Osler opening up. Dominic Osler as well in the slips in terms of to take those Alan Donald nicks in the second spell.
Yeah.
We've got Philip de Freitas in terms of your all-rounder. He can bat well. He can kind of bowl well. He's got also that personality that he's kind of that calm influence, I feel, in this team. And then you've got Paul Nixon behind the stumps, the Leicestershire legend. Bring that hype back up with the chat. And we move on to kind of later order. We've got Dominic Cork, a very clever operator in terms of still can contribute with the bat. And then finally, Alan Donald, the South African. What was it? What was the nickname that, in terms of White Lightning?
White Lightning.
White Lightning. Ridiculous wicket-taking ability with his fast bowling. Scared Michael Atherton to pieces, I feel, in that famous kind of spell with England and South Africa. Who are you slotting in for, Charles Dagnall, in that team? Or are you just saying, you know what? Everyone go out. I'll manage. Very, very modern.
Yeah.
I'll be the manager.
I could be the director of cricket of that side, I fancy. Social secretary, make sure I've got a restaurant booked for the evening and then sort of a nightclub afterwards. I mean, if I was to come in for anyone, you'd probably think I'd come in for maybe Ozzy, maybe Dominic Osler.
All right.
But I wouldn't open the batting, put it that way. I think I would put it this way, in that side, if I'm in it, I would weaken it in a variety of different ways. So So I'm more than happy to manage the side, look after their lost luggage and their airplane tickets, look after the, you know, make sure all the washing is clean, and do all the managerial responsibilities, and let them go and play the cricket, and then yeah, I would just look after them probably, but that would be a role best suited for me.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much. You've been an absolute pleasure. I'd say a brilliant team, brilliant Sixers team, with you watching on from the sideline with a cup of tea, famous tinted glasses, and maybe shouting a bit of advice at Paul Nixon from the side.
Yeah, maybe just to confuse him. But no, it's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. And there you have it, Charles Dagnall's Super Six. Thank you very much to Charles for coming on the Catch It podcast, and we'll be bringing you more players on the Super 6 series, as well as our Young Guns and Game Changer series very soon. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.